Hangar on Art is a radio program that investigates, experiments, inquires into art practices and critical theory as an extension to the Hangar Exhibitions, Residencies, Education and Research Program. The program sets a dialogue of a wide range of relationships which are established between artists, theorists, curators and researchers. Hangar on Art will feature thoughtful reflections, creative interventions, and thematic analysis.
Tanzi Mendes is a Cape Verdean artist born and raised in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. Her artworks reflect on her upbringing, focusing on the concept and inheritance of identity within these various cultures. This involves a practice of archival production, creating images that reflect on and respond to family photographs and the histories and memories, both stored within them and absent from them. As described by the writings of Mariana Aboim in Hangar's Atlantica book series, Sandeem's photographic or imagetic investigations ask, how can intergenerational modes of storytelling become archival resources for that which is unaccounted for? In what ways can inherited memories catalyze artistic production? During her visit to Hangar in 2022, these questions and more formed part of her inquiry and her exhibition. Today, she joins us on Hangar Radio to share her experiences and the discoveries of her work. Sandeem, it's a pleasure to have you with us today. I want to kick us off by asking you how you began to work with the idea of archives.
Well, for me, it started with a school assignment, actually, when I was doing an exchange program in Los Angeles in 2009. And it was an assignment for a photography class, where the theme was about finding a found photo and create a narrative. And for me, while I was away doing this exchange program, I was really like exploring this, my life, my culture, my history in that sense, because I was away being in a different country. And I was having a lot of curiosity and questions. And I began to see and experiment with using my practice for finding these answers to these questions. So with this assignment, I started to think about what a found photo could mean to me in a personal way. Like, what photo would I wish I could find? And I think that is how I got back to my own childhood memories, going through family photo albums and noticing the absence of photos of a time before my parents came to live in Europe. And I think there is where I wanted to see, like, okay, how can I use photography for this? How can I use, like, photography's ability to create its archival ability, basically? And there I was, like, experimenting with creating this found photo of my personal family album. And this first work where I recreated a photo of my mom when she had my age at that time. So in 2009, I was 23. That actually was the first one that made me think of, okay, photography can actually help me in creating this non-existing archive. And it's actually was the first thing that made me want to explore that more. And see, like, continue this, creating this illusion, basically. And I think that was how it actually started for me, to see, like, photography, this medium, the power of photography. I don't know if I answered the question in that sense, but yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's so much in there. I mean, something that stands out to me is that you said creating this illusion. But from what we've spoken about previously, I also understand that part of what you're doing is to try and fill in the gaps of a family or an ancestral archive that isn't visible. So what's, I'm curious about that tension between the real and the illusory, and, you know, how much you feel like you're sticking to a narrative or a script that you know, and how much you are the creator of that narrative.
I think it's like the balance between the real and unreal is like trying to also base it from memories, trying to base it from stories that I've heard. So it's this thing, trying to think of all these things that I've been told and how I envision things with it. And by having like, okay, there's a few that I can imagine and some are really like unknown. That is when I actually use my own creative ability to like fill in these gaps or fill in these missing links or missing elements. So it's unreal because, yeah, it's not based on like an original thing. It's not an original photo or original archive, but it is real because it has happened. You know, these people have existed, but just. I think when I was thinking about, okay, so why this photography, family photography album, like why was that for me such a important thing to recreate? I think it, because with photography at the time when I was a kid, it was like, photography was like the evidence of someone or something has existed. You can see the evidence back. And by not having these photos, by not having these photos of these people or my parents, it was as if it hasn't existed. So it also, there is this line between real and unreal, but from a childhood, like childlike, I think, way of thinking. But I think that actually was for me a strength, or it was giving me this energy of like, okay, so I can recreate this, actually make it exist, you know, make it exist in like a evidence kind of way, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. It actually brings to mind something that I remembered from Mariana's essay on your work. She talks about this practice of, I guess, giving form to moments of history that have passed, but that aren't recorded in the official or national sort of memory and the national archives. And this idea of creating counter narratives and how that sort of works to, I guess, disrupt, but also sort of, I guess, incur on sort of mainstream ideas of cultural identity. So, yeah, I guess in that sense, do you feel like what you're doing, I know you've done work that is about the personal archive, but also, you know, thinking more broadly as to the line of your ancestry and your cultural sort of family more broadly. And I'm just wondering if you see your work as political, or if that's a focus of your work.
Yeah, I'm thinking about this question because I had a good friend of mine who was like a guest teacher for one of my classes, and she asked that to my students, like, and then they asked me that question too, and it was like everything is political in a sense. Me being present in life in general, but then in the art scene, it is in a way political, and then coming also with the themes that I'm talking about is in a way like bringing to the front stories that's in a way. It's forgotten, or even don't even want to think about it in that sense. So yeah, I mean, it's not on purpose that I say I want to make political work, but I've learned through experience and through like seeing like what does it do by bringing something so personal to the front. And I believe one of my students said like when something is personal, it becomes universal. And I love this quote so much when she said it, because it's by putting something so like the personal stories is in a way is what makes for me a lot of things more real, instead of like the more general idea of what, especially in history time, like the general idea what you've been learning in school about a certain time. But when you have personal stories of people who really were in that time and how it affected them personally, for me that makes it actually more real. I don't know. So it's not it's not intentionally political, but sometimes when it needs to be political, I will be. Like, I'm not afraid to shy away of it. I have for example, one of my projects where I needed to be political because the story was asking for it. And it was a bit like off my normal way of working, because normally I come from this personal approach or personal, but it was still talking about the same thing of like trying to put stories that are forgotten or stories that are not seen or unknown to the front.
I mean, just to pull back a bit from the context of the institutional surrounds, which I'm very interested in, but you know, for the benefit of our listeners, I think I want you to speak a little bit about the role of the body in your work, because I know you spoke about that first photo that you took where you were your mother. Mm. And that a lot of your practice is about imposing these, imagined or speculative histories onto your person, and yeah. It's a very personal and intimate exercise. So I guess I'm curious how if that's a transformative experience for you, or you know, I know other artists see it as quite a performative act, and there is that separation. And so do you have boundaries around how you approach that work, and what's the experience like for you?
For me, I think like the first thing is that in a way I don't always like to use my own body in my work. Like, I think in the beginning I was, if I would look at my photography work, how I started, it was really about other people and what I was observing. And when it changed, when I started to use my own body, was because I found it difficult to kind of explain to someone else and the person that I would love to, would like to use in my work, this feeling that I'm trying to convey. It was it was something that I personally was questioning. I was having these questions. I was having these thoughts. Because I tried it, and it didn't feel natural to me. It felt a little bit too, constructed. Then it was too.
You mean when you tried with other people?
Yeah, with other people trying to take my body out of it, and I think as I'm thinking about it, it feels more. How can I explain it best? It's more like as if like. I'm writing my thoughts in my personal diary, but then I'm asking someone else to write it. You know, it feels like this authenticity, it loses for me the authenticity. It loses something like a personal energy in it. And I think that is like one part of it that I felt like, okay, I need to use myself in this, because I am the one who's asking these questions. I'm the one who's trying to understand things personally. And then the other thing is also about what I've learned also is this thing of putting yourself in a vulnerable place. By putting myself out there, I kind of hope that it also dares the viewer to kind of be vulnerable or that it's, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, yeah, that's this thing of being vulnerable, and then other people feel like more safe in a way to do that too. That's the thing that I hope, of course, but that is something that the viewer needs to decide for himself. But I've learned that that is how a lot of people have experienced my work, where they see like, okay, it's very personal and you are questioning your own identity and culture, but it makes me reflect to my own identity too. So the for me, I think those two things made it that I see the need of it, of using my own body in my work. And the boundaries therein is, I think the boundaries I kind of work through like intuitively, as in like if I don't feel comfortable with it, or if I don't like the need or the I remember with one particular work where it was right after I gave birth to my daughter, I really was not comfortable in taking pictures of myself because I was not feeling as myself as like I was, you know, it was such an intense experience, like giving birth. And then, but this project was about me trying to understand what are the subconscious things that I'm passing to my daughter, you know? So I was trying to understand this concept. So I had to, again, put the camera on myself because I was asking these questions personally. So just to give you an example of like, in a way, I was crossing my own boundary as in like how I was feeling comfortable at that time, but the need for it was understandable. So then I had to do it.
Yes. Sure. Yes, I understand. Yeah. I'm wondering as you're speaking about, I mean, that need to enter into the space of that vulnerability to create this work.
Yeah.
I recall in a previous conversation that you were speaking about how you really do see this as research and mm-hmm. you really do see this process of image making and imagining as an investigation into your histories and into identity. I'm curious about what's the reflexive process that you then have with this image that you've crossed your own boundary to create this image to learn something or to understand something. Is there a feedback loop? How does that usually, is it generative or, yeah, are your works sort of related to each other in that way? Or do you sort of have these sort of, do you need to put the work to bed? So
I think it kind of like keeps on existing in the sense of that, not always right after I make it, there's like an understanding part. It sometimes takes like years to kind of like look back out and really come out of this I don't know, this period of time where I was feeling a certain way, and then now I can look back at it and see like, okay, this was actually why I needed to do this work. So this former work, what I was just explaining, it's called Is For Me, and it was like the one that I made right after birth. Like after, like now years later that I look back at it, I can see like, I understand the choices that I was making now more better, like the choices that I made intuitively. And like, there was a lot of handcraft part of it. So I was sewing like parts of my body on this big textile. And later on, I understood that I needed to do this very repetitive and slow process as in like, because at that time I was thinking about giving like this act of giving birth, and I was really processing everything that was happening while I was doing this work. And later on, when I saw, you know, now a few times later, I can look at it and be like, I was literally sewing myself back together with this project. I was literally trying to understand like what happened and what this body is capable of, and then what else is like archived in this body, as in the teamwork that I was working with. So just to give an example of how it in a way the reflection comes a bit later, because I was like, now I'm out of it and I kind of like can understand it better. But some works like it really also is this act of presenting it, putting it in a space attached from detached from your studio space where you were working alone, and now you're sharing it with people in another space and giving it actually space to breathe. I think that's also a moment for me to, because I work mostly on the table, and then when it comes up and hanging, then I kind of like, I don't explain, it's a bit like as if at that moment I'm sometimes like in a weird space to be like, did I make this? Like as if I'm coming out of in a way it is a very meditative process when I'm making work. And when I actually hang it and put it in a space, I become like detached from it and look at it like as in at a non-personal way, and then the understanding starts
like maybe not an out of body experience, but it's like another version of yourself speaking.
Exactly. Like it's I mean, when I'm like, for me the process of making is meditative, but it's also like the thinking is like for me then out or something, and it's just really making. I'm in this space where nothing else exists but me and the work, and it's like as if I'm being like a trance, like a as if I'm in trance, like not in a very spacey way, but very like I'm just doing. And then when it's out there, when I'm out of this trance and see it in space, then I can kind of like start to understand.
I do know what you mean, and actually maybe a way for us to elaborate on this a bit more is through, I think it's your maternal grandfather, you said previously, was a griot. Is that, am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is a really like a word that they use in Cape Verde Islands. I don't know if that, like, I mean, that's something that I kind of made out of it, like how my mom was explaining it, like how, what his role was, but...
Sure, but maybe you can speak a bit about his role and how that's inspired or informed your practice.
Yeah, my grandfather, like my mom shared a memory with me about my grandfather being like a storyteller and having a book where he would read stories from. And it was something that he would share with like not only his family, his children, but also with the whole village. So it was up in the mountains, like it was a really small village. But when the moonlight, when it was full moon, there was a lot of light. So then he would go outside and read, like take his place and read for like everybody from the village would come. And they would all sit around him and he would tell these stories. So this memory was very interesting to me because it made like a lot of things more clear for me, because I've always like try to understand what my role as an artist is and why am I so like fixated on this culture and trying to understand it? Why am I so like trying to preserve it in certain ways, like trying to look at it in the past and trying to see like how can this culture still exist now within Rotterdam, within all these other cultures and within like us, this generation, what is being influenced by so many other cultures. So that is something that is something that was very intuitively, but now I'm in this position of trying to understand it better. And I think when my mom shared this memory with me and that I then made like a project about it and did like a whole installation with this particular memory of my father, you know, telling these stories from a book. And I began to see like that in a way, I have been trying to do the same what he was doing, but then in a visual manner, because I'm not a good storyteller. Like this generation of my mother, they are like the best storytellers. Everybody's always listening to them because it's very entertaining. It's very like, I don't know, exciting. And it's, I don't know, they are so natural in it. And I always like envied it. That I was like, oh, I wish I was better in that. But I have my visual work. So I think for me, it kind of like shifted this. It gave it more of a clear idea of, okay, I'm in a way, I'm as if I'm, he gave the baton to me, where I now became a storyteller, or I am in a way a storyteller, but then in a different medium, in a different way. And yeah, it made me ground more or something. Made me more like, okay, it feels like I'm in my, as if like something clicked.
Yes. Right? Yeah. I understand. I mean, I think that in, I guess, contemporary culture and I guess even contemporary arts and arts culture, there isn't necessarily, there's been a bit of a sanitization of these sort of, I guess, more animist or folkloric sort of practices and these words that sort of make you feel that there's you know, capital A art, and there's a creativity that sort of is validated within those realms. There's these spaces where, you know, like you say, you're not sure how to describe it, and you're not sure there's a sort of a meeting or a dialogue between different parts of yourself or different pieces of history, or your ancestral history, and there's not always a neat way to capture that. So I can imagine that finding this trace in your family history would have just made you feel, for me, it would have made me feel like I belonged, like, oh, makes sense.
Yeah. I love it very much. I think I think now it makes me want to explore it more and be really like confident in it and still like trying to keep in mind that I have my way of storytelling. Like, I mean, his role was maybe really about like trying to preserve the culture and how to keep those traditions. But in a way, I still want to do that, but I'm having this critical look on it and see like, what are the things that we need to preserve and what are the things that we don't? And it feels a bit like kind of harsh when I say that, but it's more like, yeah, I don't want to, there's a certain type of reality that this culture or this is for me based in Cape Verde Islands, where I know that people would stay there, but now I'm in Europe with all these other ways of looking, like this Western gaze on it. So how can you still keep a balance in those two things? Or how can you see that certain things are from a certain time or a certain place that now needs to be different in this time? So that's something I do think that I am different in the sense of like, normally the field is like really passing down the same knowledge and history things of, you know, generation to generation. And for me, I am doing that, but then with a critical look on it, critical.
Yes. Yeah, I hear you. I guess this is something I noticed in the essay, and I'm also curious about is this balancing of the Cape Verdean identity, for want of a better word, and being in the Netherlands and having the European gaze. And if you feel that the work you're creating, even though it is about a particular history, do you see that as a part of a European identity as well? Or do you see that as a very much a preservation of a Cape Verdean identity?
No, it's definitely part of European identity, just to get to the fact of that, you know, when I was in Hangar, I was really confronted by this part, actually, because to see like how much of the Portugal culture is like embedded in Cape Verdean culture. And for me, I think that's the shift that changed in my practice now that I'm looking into that for the first time. Because not that, I mean, I've been to Portugal many times, but it was the first time I was really like being the observer, trying to see like, okay, I'm seeing like similarities. So in a way, how I'm always seeing Portugal and Cape Verde Islands in a way kind of separate, but it's very much in like intertwined. And yeah, and especially a lot of European, like Cape Verdeans are like in the Netherlands, in Rotterdam, there's like a huge community there. And there's this huge, I mean, even if you would go to Cape Verde Islands now, it's almost as if you're in Europe, the way they are dressed, the mindset and how they want to be, they want to go badly to Europe, you know? So it's this thing of, there's no running around, like there's no running away from it in a way. It's embedded in the Cape Verdean culture. I'm using all the time like my own culture, but I do think what I've learned is that it goes to so many other cultures that's having the same questions, basically.
I mean, I find it really interesting, actually, that because you were born in Rotterdam, right?
Yeah. Born and raised, yeah.
Yeah, so you've really traced a sort of a diaspora back to the root completely from, you know, I imagine a citizenship and a residence in a completely different, you know, different country, which would also be home, given that it's where you would have been from when you were born. Mm-hmm. But I want to go back to this experience you had of visiting Portugal and being at Hangar.
Yeah.
Because I recall in our previous conversation you saying it was... Yeah, as you said, it was quite eye-opening. Yeah. So could you speak a bit about that experience, but also about the works that came out of it or how that's influenced the work you're making now?
Yeah, so being at Hangar kind of like was the first time I was experiencing Portugal in a different way as I've done before. While I've been to Portugal many times, visiting family and really experiencing it in that way, but it was then still in... like, yeah, in a Cape Verdean community, but being in Portugal. So it's like you're still not really part of it. So I think this was the first time I was like being asked to be present. And I think First, I was just really experiencing the city and trying to, you know, people and there were some things that I was like having difficulties with, and it was first and foremost is like the language, for example, that I had the tendency to I don't speak Portuguese, I speak Creole, you know, and in a way in my head I was like they should in a way understand it, so I was really trying to communicate with in Creole language, and they would like sometimes in a very hostile way be like, no, you need to speak Portuguese or else I'm not understanding you. Before I came to Portugal, I was in a group project, and it was about the team code switching. And in this group project, I talked about my own experience with code switching. But then for me, it was this thing of doing code switching within your own culture, where you were trying to, you know that you need to speak the language or else people would not see you or understand you, and how I'm constantly adapting to my own culture in order to be seen. So that was like doing the code switching in a purposeful way. But then in Portugal, this theme was still in my head. And with this language thing, there was this, for me, a certain refusal to code switch, because I was like, okay, I'm here. I'm a descendant of Cape Verdean slaves who were like, you know, oppressed by the Portuguese colonizers. So for me, it was like this refusal to do that or something. I was like, in a way, I'm just going to speak Creole. And, you know, like this first initial feeling. And I think that was an interesting thing that I was like, okay, this is something that I want to focus on in the sense of the power of language and how that can be a form of being. Yeah, I mean, that is an important to be part of a whole, be part of a whole group, and be part of, and how the relation between Creole and Portuguese, how the origin of Creole was in a way like a coded language where they wanted to speak differently than Portuguese in order to kind of keep things private, you know, like keep things away from Portuguese oppressors. So that is one of the things that I was like, okay, like for me, Hangar was a lot about doing research. So a lot of these questions that I started to ask. So it was about the language, power of language, but then it was also about this other part of my identity, in the sense of like, I have my grandfather, like my father's father is like from Portuguese descendant, because he is, there's a huge part of my family that is Portuguese descendant. So it's like this, just for me portrays like the complexity of identity, how in a way you have those two lines in your system, where it was one of the Africans descendant slaves who were like the Badiou's, that is like a part of Cape Verde Islands, that Badiou means actually like runaway slave, you know. So that was a very proud part of me that I all the time investigated and try to continue. Even my grandfather, the Riot, what that was his legacy, you know. But then I also have the other part was this grandfather who was more in line with Portugal and Portuguese, and even had like an important role in the oppressing part in a certain part in Cape Verde Islands. So it was the first time that I was like, I need to talk about this too. I need to actually investigate this part too. So it's the first time that I decided to want to understand things better when it comes to Cape Verdean history, when it comes to Portugal, when it comes to colonized history, and trying to understand, like, well, it's in a way also a combination of having conversation with a creator that we had talks with, Kisana Teju, and we had really interesting conversation, inspiring conversation, where she was giving me a lot about this history. Like, I was trying to understand, like, what is this feeling that I was having, was also that I felt a bit like hostility towards me in Lisbon, not by everyone, but some like part of a generation thing, I think. And she was really teaching me, of like letting me know about how she also in a way felt that, not exactly that, but in a way that kind of atmosphere when she came from Brazil to Portugal. So it's this thing of of you being from like the colonized country and come to Portugal, where in a way this feeling of like as if they don't want you there. And it was something very personal that I felt. But then in this conversation, there is like a origin. There is a whole story behind it. And for me, I have the first time that I'm like, okay, I want to delve into this story. I want to understand things better and see like how this history is like influencing the present here and especially being in Portugal. It's different than in Holland. So this theme is very interesting because I came back in Holland and talked about this with friends around me and stuff like that. And this is, for example, like a friend of mine who is from Suriname heritage said, like, this is how I'm feeling when I'm in Holland. And I never had that experience, you know? Like, do you know how I feel being from Suriname and walking in this country where I see all this history, this colonized history, and it's how my descendants are, like, like talking to me, like, you know? So, yeah, that was a first thing. And again, I see my artwork of my practice as a form of doing research. So it just gives me a reason to go and do research. And what comes out of it is what the work will be.
Yes, yes, I understand. And I think it's really interesting you talk about those experiences and the history that's around you, in the people around you, or you know, in the monuments around you, or as your friend says, walking around and seeing a city reflect history, and that history has a role for you.
Yeah.
And I guess in that way, I can also see why, you know, for Mariana, or why for some people might see your work as political, because there's an agency in it to sort of respond to the missing history. I think I read somewhere that it was a museum or a library that you went to, and you realized that there was no that there was an invisibilization of laborers or workers that were involved in either in building the space. Something like this.
Yeah, that was in Holland. That was like from a work that is called When You Reap What You Sow. And it was about this, it was about textile industry and how I was in a textile museum, and it was all about like, oh, the cotton and all this stuff. And it was really this little painting of like actual African-Americans working on these fields and getting the cotton. And it was just like, for me, this example of like, certain stories are not being told, or certain stories are not being, you know, recognized. And then feel the urge to put it in the front that it's actually, this is a major part of this whole textile industry. And it was this, I mean, it's the same when I was in Portugal, when I went to a museum, what was about this history, about Portuguese colonized history. And for the first time that I saw like an exhibition or a space where it felt like as if they were glorifying this history. And that was very shocking to me, because it was like just talking about all those amazing. And I was just like, but what about the horrific part? You know, what like as if, and that is something that I then feel the need to, you know, yeah, but this is something that comes with it. And I think that was something that is glorifying history, that is something that is, I think, in a way different from Holland. In a way they kind of a little bit do that, but in a way they also do as if it's not there, you know. It's still a conversation that needs to be held, and it's difficult to talk with like Dutch with Dutch people, Dutch or the Dutch culture, and the shifting that conversation a bit by putting it more on the table, because in a way we're asking that. But in Portugal, I was like, why is this? I mean, I also have from students of mine, Portuguese students, who actually talk about this problem and how they were raised in this culture, where they actually just talk about it in such a beautiful manner, and this horrific part is not mentioned on something. So yeah, it just gives me this thing of like, okay, then I need to go into this. You know?
Yes, yes. So I mean there's so many pieces in there. I mean, one thing I notice, and I also recall this from the essay, is that there's this difference between how different countries invisibilize these histories.
Yeah.
And as you said, you know, in Portugal, it's more of a tendency of glorification, in Holland. I recall there's a particular word they use for this sort of neutralization, or this you don't talk about that, and it's almost uncultured to speak about it or to even say that it was an issue. And and so in that sense, again, I think there is something quite radical or quite empowering about not only creating or actualizing those histories that are being invisibilized, but then, you know, presenting them in a gallery or in a museum, or putting them right up front. But where I wanted to go with that was actually, so you tutor at the Willem de Kooning Academy for Fine Arts.
Yeah.
And that means, of course, that your work is now, I guess, being taught within an institution, and is I guess, part of this this next wave of decolonial thinking that is starting to enter museums, enter institutions, for better or worse.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I'm curious how these practices then, given that they do have quite a conflicted conflicted place in the sort of in the public conscience, how is your practice received? How do you think that it's been influenced or is influencing the institutional environment?
I don't know personally how my practice, I can speculate in a sense, but I also see now, like, for the first time now, I'm not a tutor that as long. I think I'm like 3 years now, but it's the first year that I'm actually I'm one of the guiding teachers for 4 years for graduation, and the students, like, with their particular minor or particular practice, they could choose which tutor. Now I have students who actually, that I didn't know of, for example, had a minor in cultural diversity. And when I heard that, it almost made me so emotional, because I was like, dang, you have this now, you know? 10 years ago when I was graduating, or even I wasn't at the space that I'm now with my work and understand the storyline, what goes through everything. But I was touching up on the surface of this theme, and I didn't know how to move forward, because it was very intuitive work what I was making. It was just something that I wanted to make. I don't even know why at that time, but I didn't have teachers or this kind of support to be like, okay, this is something very important, go and research it, or trying to have know that it's a topic, know that it's a subject matter that you could explore. So the difference to see now that the students have this, it was wow. And also I could see the conversation that we're having, first I was exploring this really on my own. I didn't have any peers around me or even artists at that time with whom I could have this conversation about this theme that I was exploring cultural identity and all this influence, blah, blah, blah. So I now can see how, for example, my practice could be for these students a way to dare to explore their own, because it's very diverse and a very diverse background they have. But it's for them to see that I'm daring to go there, and daring to also put it on the table that your personal sources or your personal approach is as valuable as academic or whatever kind of concept, where how I was first been told by an external teacher that I was a very selfish artist who just wanted to talk about their own family and culture and that kind of thing, to now me telling them, yes, you can, because it is a way of understanding things. And by you putting yourself out there, you kind of create space for the other to come and enter in with their own questions, you know? So I think in that sense, maybe I can say that my practice has influenced students in that sense. And even this, even this intuitive making, I think a few years ago, a friend of mine actually said, yeah, you make intuitive work. And I was just like, what? because I didn't have this vocabulary in that time. I didn't know what I was making, how I was creating things, that was actually a word for it, that you could say that it was intuitive making, and that is a valuable working method. Like, for me, that was such a struggle point when I was at school, because at that time I was making so much intuitively, but I didn't know what concept driven it was. I didn't know what that means. And I think when I went to Los Angeles, when I did the exchange, where I again got the question, like, how did you come up to this word? I mean, I didn't know the word intuitively, but I said, like, yeah, it came from myself, like, as in, like, I'm my own source or something, instead of an artist or something else that inspired me. And there, it was different, because there they kind of, like, told me to embrace that, to really make that as important, because that is something that is as valuable. So I think that is something that I'm trying to do now for my students, where I really try to talk about this way of working. That is that's something that is that is if that is something that you do in your practice, then that is a good thing. Like you there's the intuitive making can be pushing the research part, you know, to like make you want to go and explore it. I mean, it comes from somewhere, and even if you don't know how or what it comes from now, it will make sense later. I mean, 10 years later, literally, I can now say, like, oh, my practice is intuitively and research based, you know. And I think that is something that I hope kind of, like, at the end of the day, I want my students to be to try to be as authentic as possible, you know, and see that and embrace themselves and the question that they have. And I don't know if that is like for my practice or maybe just for me as a person, but I don't know. This is something I try to do.
Yeah. I wish as well that 10 years ago we had teachers like that and we had those role models. But yeah, it's fantastic that you can do that. And it's, I mean, like, fantastic is not the right word. It's that it's, I guess we don't, it's what I said earlier as well. You don't have spaces to recognize, you know, something that's intuitive as real knowledge. And this is part of the sort of, I guess, disrupting the hierarchies of knowledge and introducing like these alternative epistemologies. So, you know, I think that's really, it's really important, and it's really a significant part of your practice, more than just the outputs, that you're able to sort of generate these spaces where people can follow that as well. I'm conscious of the time and of wrapping up. What your hope is in for the direction of your work, and where you kind of see this happening, at least for now, given if it's 10 years.
I'm working on some the concept for like bigger projects where I'm working, for example, with my mother, like something to explore more this. I'm settling more in this the role of the griot. Like I'm settling more into that. So one of the projects that I'm working on is being a griot together with my mother, where we actually think we're gonna have conversations about Cape Verdean culture and how she has perceived it, and how, you know, like it's two generations going in conversation, trying to come up with this storytelling way of preserving the culture, but really also looking critically at it. But I think for me, the direction, like I'm in a way, it's ready to have like more in-depth conversations, but more like this intuitive thing of like, okay, I want to have more international platforms where I can have different type of conversation. But I mean, that was a need, but then when I was in Portugal, I understood why I needed it, because it's just like I'm just seeing this research, what I'm doing in my practice, has so many layers, and it feels like I'm ready for the next layer to delve into, and that is like having a different perspective on this, like really replacing your body and your way of thinking into another space, and being confronted with other people and other cultures. And for example, Portugal is something that I'm like, I mean, it happens for a reason, but I just was surprised by the fact that I didn't make this logical, reasoning of like why I needed to go to Portugal for the next step, because it just shifted the conversation. For me, it's just shifted like this thing of, okay, I'm talking about cultural identity, I'm talking about the complexity of identity and how that is has many complex layers that needs to be explored in different ways. And I think that's the direction that I want to go now, where of course, the family and whatever, that is still like the first and foremost source in a way. But then again, it's just for me the reason to go into this bigger framework.
As in, even when you
the
layer, maybe it's a bit more. It's like you've located and situated yourself in one place, and to understand where it is, you step another layer out and look back at it. You know.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm learning so much. Like, I mean, I'm trying, maybe it's also like, in a way, like I'm deconstructing former works of mine. So like we've talked a bit about like this body as an archive and all these things, like it has something that I've been exploring intuitively, but then not in depth. You know, what does it really mean, this body of archive? Like, what is it really, like all these things that I touched, like just the surface of in formal works, I'm now ready to go in depth, you know, in like understand that from other perspectives, as in what does it mean to think about the body as an archive and about the spirituality, like all these other layers that needs to be explored more to understand it better.
I understand, and I'm excited to see where it takes you. Continuation of your practice
from where you come from and the things that you explore, and I'm excited about those type of conversations, to be like, oh, you're exploring like a piece of something that I touched upon, and you're exploring it more in depth, and I'm very open to learning more, you know. So I just wanted to say thank you for that. So also.
My absolute pleasure. And I think that's also where it's heading, where we start to create these reflexive sort of communities of practice as we map these spaces. So look, Sandeen, thank you so much. I know
we're
talking and talking.
Before
we lose our listeners. It was really great to hear more about your practice. And I look forward to seeing what you produce and come back for your next residency at Hungar.
Yes, I hope. Yeah, I will be back. It was too short. I will be back, yeah.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you to all our listeners for joining us today.
Thank you for giving me time to talk and being a listening ear, and also asking very nice questions. I loved it. I love